And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from VBS Radio, Radio 1. And welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. After playing and singing with about 15 different bands in Louisiana and Texas, Bobby Kimball ended up in a band called the Levy Band, which became a high watermark of musicianship and talent. In the middle of a tour with the Levy Band, Bobby received a call from a longtime musician friend, John Smith, who asked him to come to L.A. and sing with the musicians who had made up the band Three Dog Night, one of Bobby's favorite bands ever. He had to make a very hard decision to leave, not only one of the best bands he had ever played with, but also his native Louisiana home. After arriving in L.A. to meet the band, things changed drastically for Bobby. He was finally in the city where the music industry thrived, and most of the great musicians and singers who had created the hit songs that drew him into the fold to become a musician were living and working. After this band got together, they signed a contract with CBS Records under the name SS Fools, which was the title of the first and only LP recorded by them. This band lasted for about 18 months before Bobby decided to leave them for better opportunities. During the rehearsal stages of SS Fools, Bobby first met and became friends with Jeffrey Pucato, then the drummer with Steely Dan, and David Page, who had just co-written the Grammy-winning Silk Degrees LP with Bob Skaggs. Jeff and David were at the most of our rehearsals because they loved the music of Three Dog Night as well. A few months after leaving SS Fools, Bobby was asked by Jeff and David, the initial founders of Toto, to become the lead singer. There were no questions nor hesitation about his decision to join the band. They were the best musicians Bobby had ever heard and a perfect platform for his voice. The first LP Toto released, entitled Toto, broke out with the massive hit single Hold the Line. The band was nominated for a Grammy as Best New Band and that year, but lost to A Taste of Honey. Toto's music was very well received, and the band built a huge following of very loyal fans. Bobby was in the band for the recording of the first four records, Toto, Hydra, Turn Back, and Toto 4. It was the Toto 4 CD that absolutely defined the band and its future. At the 1982 Grammy Awards, the Toto 4 CD was nominated for record-breaking 9 Grammy Awards. One of these 9 nominations, the band won 6 Grammy Awards based on the strength and popularity of the song Rosanna. Also, Steve Luthiger, co-writer of Turn Your Love Around with Jay Graydon and Bill Chaplin, won a 7th Grammy. Altogether, the band brought home 7 Grammy Awards that evening, which set a precedent for the number of Grammy Awards ever won by a single band in one year. It was the middle of the recordings of the 5th CD that some differences broke out amongst the members of the band, and Bobby was asked to leave Toto. The band went through several singers, Fergie Frederickson and Joseph Williams, to name a couple of really great vocalists. Bobby moved to Germany for 6 years and recorded his first CD there with Frank Farian called the Far Corporation. This is where he met Simon Phillips, who played drums on the CD. The CD did very well in the charts in Europe, and a second CD was in the works by then. Bobby ended up recording 3 more CDs in Germany, Rise Up, Tribute to Ray Charles, and the Toto Classic Hits. After several vocalist changes with Toto in 1998, Bobby was asked to rejoin the band, which put the band back to its most original form, and he remained the lead vocalist for the next 10 years until the band finally dissolved in 2008. Not long after his departure from Germany, Bobby Madden began co-writing his next CD with his friend John Zyka. The CD was entitled All I Ever Needed. Now, John and Bobby are starting on the second project, but this time they have started their own record label called Future Memories Music. Bobby and John's next CD will be released on that new label, and then other artists will be considered to join that label. John and Bobby were also writing the new CD. This was back in May 2011. Bobby Kimball's latest solo release is absolutely amazing, and it's entitled We're Not in Kansas Anymore, available now for a pre-order, or actually released in Japan, and now will be available November 18th on U.S. soil and at Amazon.com. It is my great pleasure to welcome singer, songwriter, and musician Bobby Kimball to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Bobby.
How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good, man. Finally, we get together.
I'll tell you what. You know almost more about me than I do.
Man, you guys have lots of history, you know, but, you know, the bands, the people I have a hard time with is when they've been with three or four different, you know, for a long time with three or four different legendary bands. So I'm glad it was, you know, you with the guys from Three Dog Night and Toto and then your solo career. So it wasn't too bad. Because you've been with Toto for such a long time. Now, you'll be performing coming up. You got a lot of shows coming up. One of them is going to be here in Fort Myers, Florida, called the Rock Pack at Germain Arena.
And Yeah,
that's February 18th.
Are you in Florida?
I'm in Florida. The station's
in California.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I have to go and meet you.
Do you come to Florida much, you know, often, or is it just for the show in Fort Myers?
Well, actually, February the 18th is that show.
Right.
I am going to be going to Europe in November. I decided to keep myself a little free, but. Yeah, it's so nice to have a little free time. But usually, every year, I'm on the road 200 to 250 days a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But I absolutely adore that. And Ray, I have to tell you, last year, March the 29th, my birthday, I turned 69 years old. However, when I did, since I was on the road, and since I am on the road playing wonderful concerts and having so much fun with the most wonderful people in the audience, and that come back and get so many pictures and so many autographs and whatever, and I do not charge them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to meet them. I love them. You know, some bands charge people to come back. They sell them a VIP ticket, okay? And it's a lot of money. But when someone comes to my concert and buys a ticket to get in, they, to me, are a VIP already.
Right.
And I just tell them to come on back, and I'll sign and do photos. I'll do whatever you want to do. Because you are a very important person to me, and I love you. And they come back and tell me the same.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, those VIP things are pretty pricey. I agree with you.
They are, but yeah. You know, I can't cause somebody to think they're a VIP person. Only if they spend a lot of money.
Right, right. That's true.
If they are so wonderful to come to my concert and just buy a ticket to get in,
yep.
They are a VIP to me.
There you go. I'm sure they appreciate that, Bobby.
Well, I've never gotten a complaint.
You know, this rock pack in Fort Myers is cool. It's awesome. And they've done this before, and I've chatted. I think John Payne, isn't he? He's involved, right? Isn't he like the music director or something?
No, he's not. No, he is not.
He is not, okay.
John Payne was in that first rock pack
right.
Concert in Germain Arena, and I was too. Now, I got to tell you one thing. It was really warm outside, mm-hmm. and when we walked into the Germain Arena, which is a hockey arena.
Right.
Oh, my God. They have plywood over the ice, but it was such a nice temperature inside there. I just loved
That's
it.
Good.
But John Payne was, he was kind of sort of the leader of that. However, right. The guy that owns that name,
mm-hmm.
the Rock Pack, is Kevin Demers.
Right.
And I think there was a little problem between Kevin and John, so John is not with Kevin's Rock Pack.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I did have John on the show, and he was talking about he had some issues in Vegas, those shows in Vegas. And I think there's like a lawsuit or something that happened there. But, I think it's KDIM Entertainment that's putting this on? This
oh,
show,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
This show's got Brian Howe from Bad Company, Fran Cosmo, formerly of Boston, Bobby Kimball, of course, of Toto, Chuck Negron, a good friend of Three Dog Night, Bill Champlin from Chicago, Denny Lane from the Moody Blues, and Terry Sylvester from the Hollies. So this is a great show.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And besides Fort Myers, you've got some shows. Let's see, you got coming up, you got December 1st. I think you'll be in Belgium, right? There's some kind of private event.
That's right, in Liège, Belgium, it's right above Brussels.
Okay.
I'm going to play one concert for this wonderful, wonderful agent over there. His name is Don Carey.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my God, he is booking me so many concerts. Normally I book my own concerts on the Internet.
Right.
You know, in my email. But, you know, when I go over there, I'll get there November the 30th, but December the 1st,
mm-hmm.
I'll play in Don's hometown, Liège, Liège, Belgium.
Right.
And it's going to be wonderful. And I have to tell you, I am going to do that concert with a band from Germany, and
mm-hmm.
I swear to God, the band I'm going to do that concert with is called the Tom Pfeiffer Band.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I've ever played with a better band than that.
Really?
I played a concert with them about 5 months ago,
mm-hmm.
in Germany, and oh my God, they were so incredible. They have, I've been friends with, they have two guitar players, but I've been friends with one of the guitar players. His name is Andy, and I met him at the Frankfurt Music Messe
right.
about 2003. And, oh, Jesus Christ. He had a different band then, and one night after the Frankfurt Music Messe shut down, we went about 10 miles from there and did a concert with Andy's other band. But I thought he was fantastic. But now he's with this Tom Pfeiffer band, and there is a guitar player, another guitar player, that is a little better than he is. Oh, Jesus. And they have two absolutely wonderful keyboard players.
Right.
And the bass player, the drummer, the percussionist, they're so amazing. But one of the coolest things I had ever heard about being on stage with that band,
mm-hmm.
six of those guys they are back, the best background vocalists I've ever heard in my life. They all sound like lead singers, and, you know, they sing, they could sing as high as me. And I had never heard the background vocals on the songs I was doing on stage. I had never heard them done as good as the Tom Pfeiffer band did them. And,
wow.
And their playing was just unbelievable.
Does that band, are they primarily in Belgium, or do they get around to other places?
No, they are in Germany. They're near this place called Gießen, Germany. Oh my God.
Great band.
I played with them in Gießen, Germany. And I swear to God, I kept having to turn around and look at them and go, Jesus, you guys are all God.
Well, you get, in December also, you get to go to the Netherlands, and you're going to be performing, I think you're doing a TV show or something, and you're going to be playing with an orchestra, right?
I am.
Yeah.
I am. It's going to be a big orchestra, and I have to go rehearse with them for 2 days, but I'm only going to be singing 3 songs on the 10th on a big TV show and 3 songs on the 11th.
Wow, yeah, that's exciting.
I think the
orchestra is called, is it Metropole? Is that the name of the orchestra?
I don't know the name of the orchestra. I've got it here.
Yeah, Metropole Orchestra.
Well, certainly. Thank you for letting me know.
They've also won a Grammy Award, so they must be pretty darn good.
Oh, my God. Well, there's going to be a lot of Grammy winners up there.
Oh, yeah. You'll be in Puerto Rico December 20th, again with the Rock Pack, live in Puerto Rico. That's December 27th. And January 18th through the 22nd, you'll be at the NAMM convention, right, in California? You'll be at NAMM.
You bet. And by the way, the second highest member of the NAMM show. He's number 2 under the CEO. Okay.
Okay.
His name is Alan Friedman.
And
he is he's from close to New York, and he has been my accountant for about 20 years. And he is also a musician. Mm-hmm. He plays guitar, my God, he was here about a week ago, and he was just, you know, getting some things ready for the NAMM convention. He always comes a little early. But he dropped off 3 CDs to me that I had been singing about 4 songs on each one, and he's absolutely a wonderful, wonderful guy.
I think the Puerto Rico gig is January 27th, right?
Let me take a look.
Rock Pike Live. And that says it's got John Payne in it. And
That's but I have to tell you, Kevin Demers is the owner of that name, Rock Pack.
Right. So John might not be there.
John, I think John will be there because John has this guy, let's see if I can find a name. Lee. My God, I have to find Lee's name. But I think John sold that name to this guy Lee.
I got you. And that show is going to have you and Lou Gramm from Foreigner, who I've talked to before, and also I've had on my show Fee Waybill from The Tubes. He's going to be in that show as well. That's another great show. I love these shows that they showcase all these legends together, you know. And I know Ringo's done it with his all-star band, and the Happy Together tour is another one. I love them. I think they're wonderful, you know. Yeah, do you like playing in those kind of, you know, headline, you know, with everybody headlining?
Absolute.
Yeah.
Absolute.
Yeah.
I have done so many concerts with, mm-hmm. with some absolute wonderful singers, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Bill Champlin, by the way, I have to tell you, when I first got with Toto,
mm-hmm.
several, you know, the guys at Toto, they were studio musicians for a lot of other albums.
Right, right.
You know, anyhow, a lot of the producers that had hired maybe one or two of the guys in Toto to come and play on an album for someone else, they were showing up at our studio, Studio 55 here in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
where we were doing the first album, and while it was sitting there, I was in the vocal booth singing, and when I came out, so many of them came over to me and asked me if I would come and do some background vocals, which I hadn't done that before, except when we first started recording the first Toto album, the guy that owned that studio, he was producing a really, really famous black girl singer, and she was wonderful. He came down and got me and David Page to do some background vocals.
Mm-hmm.
But when those producers came and talked to me about doing some background vocals, the thing is Bill Champlin was mm-hmm. there. That is how I met Bill Champlin.
Right.
Oh my God! And Bill had been playing with a band called Sons of Champlin.
Mm-hmm.
And oh boy, that band was good. Oh my God! But anyhow, not too long from then, he got in the band Chicago playing. After that guitar player from Chicago died.
Yeah.
Terry
Cap.
He got.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. Anyhow. They asked Bill to come and Bill plays guitar, Bill plays keyboard, and he's one of the best Hammond B3 players I've ever heard in my life. Mm. But anyhow, Bill and I, right then, we became a duo.
Right.
Okay? Well, we started singing on so many other albums that you know, background vocals,
mm-hmm.
and we did that for quite a while. But the thing is, they did not have Pro Tools at that point.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we were singing three parts, all of the every line that we would sing, we had to sing a triple line, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We had to sing it three times, and if we were singing three or four-part harmony, oh my God, that was a lot for for a chorus.
Sure.
And, you know, when Pro Tools came out, they could cut and paste chorus, mm-hmm. the first chorus to the second chorus, the third chorus, the part of the outro. Well, they didn't have Pro Tools when Bill and I first started doing all this, so we had to be there for about 6 hours singing like crazy.
Oh, wow.
But it was very fun.
Yeah.
And after a while, you know, we were doing like 3 or 4 part harmony, and I looked at Bill and I told him, I said, Bill, I know we're getting paid triple what, you know, for singing this background stuff and everything, but I think we really need a third singer, a partner with this, and that will help us out a lot. And guess who that third person was? Guess who became the trio?
With you and him?
Me, Bill, and we got the third guy to come in, Michael McDonald.
Oh, Michael McDonald. Oh, wow.
Yes. And if any one of us got called to go and do background vocals, all three of us would show up.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So you guys, now this was with Toto, though. Was this in the beginning? Or was this studio work, some other studio work that you were doing?
Well, it was in the beginning of Toto because a lot of the producers that had hired other members of the band to come and do things, you know.
Sure.
They were hiring, they always had been hiring Bill because Bill is such a wonderful background singer. If we were making up the background vocal, and we created, you know, four-part harmony or 3-part harmony.
Yeah.
And we would sing for so long, and when Michael McDonald got with us, it was absolutely so wonderful. I love him.
Yeah.
He's such a great guy.
Yeah.
And wonderful singer. Everything is so cool about him. Everything is so cool about Bill. Bill only lives 5 blocks from me.
Oh, really?
And I see him so much, and so many times.
Yep.
When I get on a concert that they're going to have, you know, more than 3 to 5 vocalists on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I always let them know that Bill's a killer singer, and he's just such a wonderful player and everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's so nice.
Yeah. I want to talk about, I want to get more into Toto, but I want to talk about your new album, your new solo release. It's called We're Not Into Kansas Anymore, In Kansas Anymore. Now, does that have any reference to not being in Toto anymore?
No. Actually, let me tell you something.
Uh-huh.
I do not hate anything about Toto. Actually, the guy singing with him right now, Joseph Williams.
Right.
I sang on about 5 CDs with him. I sang background vocals, some background vocals on 2 of his solo CDs. But
yep.
We sang on 3 other CDs together, and Bill Champlin was on one of them. But anyhow, I have no problems with Toto.
Mm-hmm.
I love their music. I love their band. And I got to tell you something, Ray. I love everyone on this planet.
Yep.
I do not spend 1 second of my life being full of hate or anger at anyone or anything.
Good. That's the right attitude to have, especially nowadays.
Yes, of course. And the thing about it is you know, even if someone jumps on me and shoves me into the mud, or you know, I don't care.
Right.
That does not bother me because you know, I feel it makes me feel sorry for them.
Yep.
Because they don't know how to live a great life.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right.
Well,
people. Yeah.
I have to tell you a little story. If you don't mind.
Sure.
When I was 5 years old, actually when I was 4 and a half years old, down in Louisiana in a town a little tiny town of 3,000 people, right on about 8 miles from the Texas border.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there was only one barbershop, one red light, one Main Street. And the thing is, 4.5 years old, since my mother had absolute perfect pitch, everything mm-hmm. she heard, oh, my God, she could sit down at the piano that she had since she was 13. And her father died when she was 13.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Frankfurt, Germany.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But anyhow, he gave her a piano.
Right.
And anyhow, anything she ever, ever heard on the radio or on a record, she could sit down and play it. Every note.
Really? Perfectly. Just by ear.
Perfect
yeah.
pitch. Perfect pitch.
Yeah.
You never have a problem playing anything. Huh. Well, I wish I had perfect pitch, but the thing is not that many people do have perfect
mm-hmm.
pitch.
Right.
But my mom did have it, and when I was 4.5 years old, she said, sit down at the piano. You've been watching me so long and listening. She said, I want to teach you a lot of chords on
mm-hmm.
the piano.
Right.
So when I was 4.5, by the time I was 5, I had learned about 300 chords on the piano. Oh, my God, I would sit at the piano and play chords for about mm-hmm. An hour and a half. But the problem, I did not know anything about rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I went to the barber shop when I was 5 o'clock. When I was 5 years old, and I'd gone to the barber shop before, but anyhow, when I had just turned 5, I was getting a haircut, and right across from where I was sitting getting a haircut, there was this black guy standing, his back was to me, but he was standing up and shining this guy's shoes, and he was so into New Orleans music,
mm-hmm.
and he was popping his shoeshine rag to a New Orleans second line beat.
Huh.
Oh, my God. And so it was so impressive to me that I went up to the barbershop during a weekday for 3 weeks, and I would watch him for about 45 minutes and run. Then I would run home and
mm-hmm.
and start taking that rhythm and my mother's chords, and my God, I started writing songs when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
Yes, and I have to tell you, white people treated black people terrible
back then,
when
yeah.
I was 5.
Yeah.
And anyhow, they never, ever called this guy by his real name.
Mm-hmm.
He was tanning leather shoes, so they called him Tanner.
Huh.
Okay, and after 3 weeks, I would sit about 5 feet from where he was shining shoes on this couch.
Right.
And he would look over at me and tell me, he said, this song, he would tell me the name of the song that he was going to be popping that rag to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. It was so unbelievable. And it taught me so much rhythm. But
yeah.
after 3 weeks, we had become best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And white people and black people, they were not best friends.
Back then, yeah. Yeah.
Very seldom would they even communicate with each other. And anyhow, Tanner became my absolute best friend because he was such a nice person
mm-hmm.
and such a brilliant rhythmist. And so I would go to the barbershop once a week after that 3 weeks. I would go there once a week after 5 o'clock when he would get off. at work, and we would walk down the main street for about 30 minutes, just once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere I looked, up on the main street, everywhere I looked up on the buildings, they had signs everywhere that said white entrance, colored entrance,
right. Mm-hmm.
Drinking fountains, restrooms,
yep.
Everything had a sign on it. And the second week we walked down that main street for 30 minutes, I asked him, I said, Tanner, how do those signs make you feel, my friend? Like you're not a human being or like you're a slave? And he just put his hand on my shoulder and he said, Bobby, says, never, never take orders from anyone. And please don't ever give orders to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, a little advice. He said, don't spend one moment of your whole life being full of hate or full of anger at anyone or anything. He said, but my best advice I think I can give you. And he said, from this very second, right now, until the day you die, he said, Bobby, only do everything that makes you feel like you are the happiest person you could possibly be. Oh, my God. That advice is, oh, my God, it was so, so deep and strong.
Wow. That's a great story.
Well, the thing is he and I were such great friends, but I would see him so very often, you know,
right.
Because he was such a brilliant guy and
mm-hmm.
such a nice person, and he knew so many wonderful things about about communicating with people in the world. And when I was when I was 12 years old, he was 59, because I met him when I was 5 and he was 52.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was on the way to town to buy some milk for my mother at this market. And in the white neighborhood, they had 3 railroad crossings. In the black neighborhood, they had 1. And the 3 in the white neighborhood had a gate that would keep a car or anything from going across the track. In the black neighborhood, they had no gate. They only had this little swinging device. Well, anyhow, the market I was going to was about a block past the railroad track on the other side, and I kept hearing a train whistle, and there were a lot of trains that used to come through that little town I lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going fast. Well, I got to the railroad track, and there was this huge building to my right, about 5 feet from the railroad track, that they downloaded trains into, and it was about 200 feet wide and about 500 feet long. And when that little swinging device was swinging out, I thought, yeah, there's a train coming, but you know, I'd heard that train whistle for a long time getting to that street. And when I turned on that street to go over the track, I could not see the train coming from my right because of that building.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, the train whistle, you know, I decided, don't go over that track yet, buddy. And the train whistle stopped for about 3 seconds. And I heard a car coming up behind me.
Right.
I was on the side of the road. They weren't going to hit me.
Right.
But I turned around and looked, and I noticed this car had the windows up.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the passenger was Tanner.
Really?
Oh, my God. So I jumped off of my bicycle since they had the windows up, and I knew they couldn't see the train, so they couldn't hear it either.
Right, right.
Well, I jumped off my bicycle. I was going to run out in front of the car in the street and throw my arms up and try to stop them, but they were going a little fast, and when I got to the car, I was not in front of it. I was at the door, and I slapped the door, but they had the radio going so loud they didn't really hear it, and they kept going, and 10 feet in front of my face, I saw my best friend get hit by a train and die.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
The two front doors, that train drug the car 1,200 feet.
Wow.
And it really slammed the car. They had over 100 trains. Oh, my God.
What a
there
story
were 100
that
things.
Is.
Oh, my God. Well, I ran over 1,200 feet and took a look at the car.
Yeah.
And the two front doors were about 2.5 feet apart. And the front door on Tanner's side, it looked like someone was in that car pouring a few buckets of blood out the door.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't stay there. I got on the bike and went home and not.
Yeah.
I was so freaked out. And
man, they should make a movie out of that, you know.
They're going to make a movie out of that because I wrote it.
Yeah, good.
Well, the thing is, Tanner has never, ever left my mind.
Right.
Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I started playing a lot of nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
My mother and father gave me a one-page permission document that they signed to play in a nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to dig this. They had several clubs. There were 8 miles from my hometown to Texas.
Right.
Well, 4 miles out of my hometown and 4 miles from the Texas border, they had a whole lot of clubs because drinking age in Texas was 21 years old. Drinking age in Louisiana was 18.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like fleas coming across the border on the weekend. And, you know, the clubs, you know, some of them would hold 8,000 people. Some 7,000. The smallest one was 1,500. But all of them were so packed, and there was a big, big crowd outside the clubs waiting for people to leave so that they could go in.
Yeah. I want to tell my listening audience, you grew up, is it Vinton, Louisiana, right?
That is correct.
And as of 2010, they had a population of 3,212, so 3,200 people. So it was a small town, but you guys produce a couple of famous people from there. Marsha Ball, who's a singer-songwriter, and Clarence Brown.
Oh, yeah, she was a friend of mine.
Yeah, Clarence Brown, blues musician, who passed away in 2005. He was also from that town, right?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
It really was. God, there were so many great musicians down in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
I've talked to, do you know Tony Joe White?
I do.
He's from Oak Grove, I think, and I've talked to him. He's a nice guy as well. He's, you know, deep down in the, you know, real south there in Louisiana, and, you know, with poke weed, poke salad.
Oh, but, my God. I love Louisiana.
Yeah. I want to get back to your new album, which I thought was awesome.
Can I tell you just a little bit more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. When Tanner died, he was 59. I was 12.
Right.
And anyhow, when I about a month before I got a call from John Smith in 1974 to come to L.A. and play with those guys from Three Dog Night at
right.
the school.
Yep.
Okay, I wrote a song called Tanner's song. I think it's one of the best songs I've ever written in my life. And, oh, my God, I played it for about 3,000 people without recording it. And they were just so freaked out when they would hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, I didn't record it, but in 2010, I got a call from the CEO and manager of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame.
Right.
He asked me, he says, can you come down in 14 days and be inducted into the mm-hmm. Louisiana Music Hall of Fame in New Orleans? And, oh, my God, when I saw that list of musicians in that Hall of Fame, I just freaked. Couldn't believe I was going to be in it. But the thing is, I was thinking 14 days I'm going down. I'm not going to go down there until I go in the studio and record Tanner's song.
Mm-hmm.
I did, and I played it. I played the recording on the stage when they were giving me the stuff for the Hall of Fame. You know, they gave me a lot of things,
yeah.
And so anyhow, I thought the audience was going to fall over and pass out. They were just freaked out at how great the song was.
Yeah.
Well, I was there for a week, and when I came back to L.A. To home, I started writing a book called Tanner's Song.
Oh,
and, yes. And the thing is, I got to page 15 and I started thinking, hey, dummy, don't write a book
mm-hmm.
for this. You know, 5-year-old kids are not going to read your book, you know. If you will, write a movie so that 5-year-old kids could see the movie and
yep.
learn the advice that Tanner gave me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote about 50 or 60 pages story,
mm-hmm.
and then I hired a screenplay writer who was fantastic. I have a producer, a screenplay writer, a director, And fairly soon, we are going to go to Vinton, my hometown,
mm-hmm.
and record the movie.
Awesome.
We're going to film it, and the people there are just going to freak out.
Now, do you have actors already picked out for the movie?
The director does.
Okay.
The director told me that he would like to get Danny Glover to play Tanner.
Oh, to play Tanner. Okay.
That would not suck.
Yeah. I could see that.
Oh, my God. And
yeah.
The music that I have written for that movie,
mm-hmm.
oh, Jesus, it's so wonderful. Oh, by the way, I wrote Tanner's Song, you know, and that's going to be the main title of the movie, Tanner's Song.
Tanner's
but
Song, yeah.
Right under it, there's going to be a subtitle of another song that I wrote, and that song is called Living Your Life for Happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote those. I wrote the lyrics for that song, some of the best I've ever written. I wrote them in about 30 minutes because Tanner had told me some of the best advice in
yep.
the world.
Oh, yeah.
So it was very easy to write that. And underneath Tanner's song, a little smaller, the subtitle is going to be Living Your Life for Happiness.
That's going to be great. That's going to be a great movie. It really will.
Well, I'll tell you, so Danny Glover, when he read the screenplay, he
yeah.
was begging the director, please let me be that guy.
Another great actor I would have thought about was a guy named Chadwick Boseman, who did 42, and he did James Brown story. The guy's a great young actor, but he was exactly James Brown in that movie, and he did Jackie Robinson too, so he's also
yeah.
another guy. Yeah, he's a good actor as well.
We may talk again about that.
Yep.
I have your personal numbers.
There you go.
We will talk.
But I do love the album. We're not in Kansas anymore. We're looking forward to the movie. When do you think this is going to happen? When do you think the movie's going to happen?
Well, they're still hiring. They're still hiring actors.
Okay.
You know, and by the way, on the album, We're Not in Kansas Anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a song called On My Feet.
Oh yeah.
And since Tanner was a shoeshine guy, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to put that song, which is one of my favorites on the album, I think I'm going to put that in the movie.
Well, that's one of my favorites, too. It's kind of a, you know, funky, blue-eyed soul type of thing, you know, type of song. And I really dug that one. It's a good song.
Yes. Yeah. I like that song, Hey, It's Me.
Hey, It's Me, which is a rocker. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And there's a song, Flatline.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love the whole album. It was so fun to record that and co-write everything. Jesus Christ.
Well, everyone needs to buy this album. It's it'll be officially released in the U.S. November 18th, it'll definitely be on Amazon. It's already available in Japan. It's a great, great, great album from Bobby Kimball, and everyone needs to buy it. It's you know, I think one of the best solo albums out there. You also have you dedicated this album as well, right? To Tony Wilcox and Jimmy Jameson.
Jimmy Jameson.
Yeah.
Oh, did you ever hear the Kimball Jameson CD?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, I was asked by the guy from Frontiers Records in Italy about 10 days before Jimmy died.
Okay.
He said, I want you to do another one. Well, I kept calling Jimmy, but he was having some health problems. And
right.
And he never answered the phone or called back.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he died. And God, he was one of my best friends for over 30 years.
Mm.
I just loved him.
That's a shame.
Such a great guy.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people we grew up with and a lot of our friends are going early. A lot of my friends are gone, too, you know, and it's sad. You know, you think they're going to be around a little bit longer, but they're not. They go way too early.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But, it's a wonderful album. Back to Toto. You know, Toto released, 17 albums, and have sold over 40 million albums to date. Are they still active? Is Toto still active? I know Steve is Consider there, David, and also Joe, I guess, is still singing there. I know Steve does lots of tours with Ringo. I saw Steve play with Ringo. I was a guest of Ringo's band. So they're still out there. If they ask you to play a couple of gigs, would you do it?
If they ask me, you bet I would. Yeah, because I have always loved Toto, and because of what Tanner told me, I will never, ever, ever hate him.
Yeah,
I don't even care if they shove me into the mud. But I love Toto because that band is one of the reasons so many people know me.
Yeah,
and I just had so much fun singing with them and writing songs, and you know, the last studio album. my God, it was so fun. I got to tell you. Well, when we went in the studio, nobody had written any songs yet for the album.
Right.
Well, we were in Simon Phillips' studio, and my God, Simon Phillips, his studio was really wonderful.
Yeah.
But he, oh my God, is like producing and he was just so wonderful making making something sound the best it could be. And the band would go into the studio, play for about 6 hours, and he would turn on the Pro Tool in the other room, and this other guy would operate that and record the jam. And, there was a guy sitting next to Simon, and when Simon felt like there was a part of the jam that they were doing that was maybe a verse or a chorus or whatever, or something important, he would tell a guy real quick, just shake his head at him, and the guy had an iPad that was, it had a spot there. He would just tap that spot, and when they would finish jamming for 6 hours, Simon would go in and get behind the board, and he would look at where that guy had tapped the important thing that Simon thought he should use. And about an hour, Simon would put together the verses, the choruses, the outro, everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He would make a CD out of that. He would give it to me, and I would go home and work for about 16 hours writing lyrics.
Wow.
They didn't have a name for the songs.
Yeah.
Well, I would work a long time, and the next day I would bring that in. If everyone thought the lyrics were correct, we would go ahead and do it.
Go ahead and do it.
If they thought it was not correct, it needs to be changed. Well, I would go back home, write.
I
wrote all of the lyrics for about 5 of the songs, and 3 more of the songs, some of the other guys helped me finish up my lyrics. And, 8 of the 11 songs on that Falling In Between CD, I wrote every word for the song Falling In Between, which is the name of the album. And the thing is 8 of the 11 songs, but I did not get paid for my publishing
really?
On that.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
That happens a lot. That happens a lot, unfortunately. Yeah.
Believe me, I know.
But Bobby, we only got a few more minutes here. I just wanted to touch on a couple things. One of those.
Anything you want, Ray.
Thank you, sir. One of those classic rock staples of all time we can identify with you is Hold the Line, baby. What a
you
song.
Know what?
1978, number 5 on Hot 100. Great
I'll tell
song.
You what. When I go and do a concert, now I'm going to do some Toto songs still, but, the stuff that I sang. And anyhow, I am going to do quite a few songs off the new solo CD because I absolutely adore it.
Of course, yeah.
But the promoters they can advertise. They have to put my name in 100% lettering. But original lead singer of Toto, because I sang the very first song that they released as a single.
Yep.
And so many people fell in love with the band because of that song.
Oh yeah, that was a biggie. Was a big one. Yeah.
Some of the guys at Toto were telling me, "You can't say you were the original lead singer of Toto." But if you sang the very first song that was a single, I think you could put original lead singer.
Yeah.
Never ever said there were no other lead singers.
Well, Toto was a band that really didn't have a true face to the band, right? They had everyone sung pretty much in that band, Everyone had like a part. So it was. It's hard to say, like a Mick Jagger. You know, there was no Mick Jagger in the band, right?
That is correct.
Yep. But everybody had a part, and you all, you know, made Toto. It was a, like a group effort, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys, I wish I had more time because, you know, I did want to talk to you about some of the things you did. You did a motorcycle. You joined a motorcycle club in Iraq, which is awesome. That had to be a hell of an experience. Did you actually ride around in Iraq on motorcycles?
Well, let me tell you this. I went to Iraq in 2013 with Dave Jenkins from Pablo Cruz and Bill
right.
Champlin, and we played a 3-week thing. We played every major U.S. Army base that used to be
right.
an Iraq base.
Right.
But the U.S. Army captured the base and turned it into a U.S. Army base.
Mm-hmm.
And, God, it was so incredible to do that for the soldiers that were protecting our lives.
Yeah.
And, anyhow, when we played in Baghdad, Jesus Christ, I was told, if you're not singing on the stage, you have to be underground. You know, you had to go into one of those safety pyramid things. I was about 20 feet underground and 2,500 feet above the ground, connected to the ground. There was this blimp with multi-million dollar cameras on it.
Right.
And about 10 miles outside the base, these cameras were pointed there, and they were pointed into the base too. But anything that left the ground with a fire trail or really fast, this red alert siren would go on automatically. That blimp would turn it on, and it would go 3 rounds. Well, I was 20 feet underground, and I did not hear it. But I looked at my watch, and I thought, I knew it was my turn to sing. And Bill Champlin sang first.
Right.
Dave Jenkins sang second, and it was my turn. So the siren had stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran up the stairs and got up on this 10-foot stage, grabbed my microphone, and looked in front of the stage, and there were 5,000 men and women soldiers running as fast
wow.
as they could from that stage. And I looked at Dave Jenkins and said, what in the hell did you just do? And, you know, two soldiers came walking up on the stage, and they told us, you got to get in back of the stage and lay on your face. there was a cement thing back in back of the stage.
Yeah.
We did because, my God, I noticed how bad a shrapnel from a missile. Oh, God. I saw one thing in the bomb museum when I first got there. It was a 4-foot by 4-foot metal thing hanging, and it was about 2.5 inches thick. But there was a hole in the middle of it. And I asked this guy, I said, what the hell happened? He said, a piece of shrapnel about the size of a marble going over 2,000 miles an hour
wow.
hit that and put a hole in it.
Wow.
Well, when we laid on the ground and we heard the missile blow up, it blew up 100 yards from the stage.
Oh, 100 yards. Jeez.
Yes.
That's pretty darn close.
Yes. And when I walked back up on the stage about 20 minutes later, we were going to finish playing.
Yeah.
When I got up there, I looked around. I saw about 25 holes in the stage.
In the stage. Jeez.
We would have died.
Yeah. Well, Bobby, thank you for all you do with the military, man. I'm sure they really appreciate you. You could be the next Bob Hope, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here in Los Angeles, there is a company called Rock for Vets.
Yep.
And the owner of that company, he owns a club, but he has a lot of benefit concerts for the vets.
Yeah.
After they come back out.
Right. Right.
You know, if they're injured or whatever, and also we raise money for the hospitals so mm-hmm. that they will take care of everything.
Bless you, man. Bless you.
Yeah. And I love being on the board of directors of Rock for mm-hmm. Vets.
You are a good man. Bobby, we're going to get you on the show again. Let me know when you're closer and shooting the film down in Louisiana, and we'll talk about the film, and we'll keep track of it right up until the release of the film, because that's a very important story that needs to be told and for everybody to watch on the big screen.
Ray, I cannot wait for you to see the film.
I'm excited. I'm excited. It sounds like a great movie, and we're all looking forward to it. But we'll get you back on the show again. You have my information. I have yours.
Yes, you heard the whole solo CD?
I did. I heard most of it, but I need you guys to send it to me.
Not a problem.
So
I just about a week ago,
right.
King Records sent me 10 CDs.
Okay, well, just have them send me one. I'll give, I guess, your manager my address, and we'll get it done. But Bobby, thank you so much, man, for being on the show. I really, really appreciate it. We appreciate everything you've done, all the great music you've given us. We're looking forward to We're Not in Kansas Anymore, and we're definitely looking forward to the movie. It's a great project, and you always have lots of projects going on, and you're always all over the world, so I hope you get some rest here.
Yes, it's kind of wonderful, but I absolutely adore being on the road and
yep.
doing wonderful concerts and the people being so happy and and very important people.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Bobby.
I cannot wait to come to Fort Myers and meet you.
Well, we'll come down there and we'll get together.
Absolutely wonderful, sir.
All right, man.
And
take care.
I absolutely love talking with you on
Me
this.
Me too. The feeling is mutual. Thank you so much, Bobby.
Okay, my brother.
All right, man. Bye-bye. Purchase Bobby Kimball's new solo release entitled We're Not in Kansas Anymore, available November 18th at Amazon.com, available already released in Japan. Bobby Kimball will be performing, remember, at Rock Pack at the Germain Arena in Fort Myers, Florida on Saturday, February 18th, 2017. What a show. Brian Howe from Bad Company, Fran Cosmo from Boston, Bobby Kimball from Toto, Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night, Bill Champlin from Chicago, Denny Lane from the Moody Blues, and Holly Hits starring Terry Sylvester. Visit Bobby Kimball's official website, www.bobbykimball.com. Bobby Kimball on Facebook, www.facebook.com/Bobby Kimball fan page. Bobby Kimball is also on Twitter, twitter.com/Bobby Kimball. Very special thanks to Don Carey of Premium Music Production and to Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Ray Sciascio Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on the Ray Sciascio Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C. Available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Ray Sciascio Show, brought to you by The Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552. 1-800-522-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.